Good morning. I'm Arlisha Mathis. I introduced myself earlier, but a few more of you have come into the room. I am an assistant professor at the University of Michigan Flint School of Health Professions and Studies. And I've spent the last few years looking at public health systems and communities. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I want to start out talking about primary care programs specifically, primary care programs and services. And by primary care, I'm looking at the aspect of the health system that assures person-focused care over time to a specific or a defined population.
Can you all hear?
I need to talk a little louder. Okay, I'm sorry. These are some of the services that you would find at the Florida Department of Health that are under the primary care funding category. And some services that you'll see here include maternal health, family planning, comprehensive child health, comprehensive adult health, and we have some others. During the last decade, there has been an increased effort to look for ways to provide these services at a lower cost. So one of the most popular ways for local and state governments to reduce cost is to contract out services to other providers. And the term that we use for this process is called privatization, although there are other ways that you can privatize services other than contracting. For this particular study, we were looking at contracting. The two theories that apply in discussions of privatization are market theory and public choice theory. And according to market theory, private providers can produce goods and services more efficiently because of competition. And financing for public services is not directly connected to the actual service being produced, but they're the result of the political process. And because the revenues come from taxes, government organizations are more likely to use budget size in reference to performance. So the other theory, public choice theory, proposes that the government is inherently inefficient and it creates the natural characteristics of a monopoly. So over time, programs will become larger and the incentive structures work against the public at large while serving those who have interest in increasing the public expenditures. What this says is that government agencies encourage public personnel to advance their power, budget, staffing levels, and this leads to building empires and overproducing services. And these are the two theories that we find talking about privatization. So our hypothesis is built on these two theories that contracting for primary care to other providers will reduce the cost of providing these services compared to providing these services within a county health department. So this study is a retrospective longitudinal population study, and we use data that was collected from the Florida Department of Health Contract Management System, the variance report. So for the purpose of this study, I focused on counties with populations that have over 500,000 people. So this kept county sizes similar, and the larger counties were more likely to contract out services than smaller counties. The data I used was from 2000 through 2004, and it was these specific fiscal years. And I have the counties listed here, which also I have on the next slide. You'll see those a few slides in advance. The things I was interested in looking at, the variables of interest or the items, were cost, unduplicated number of clients, the number of services performed, program size, or the number of employees, and I was looking at specific fiscal years. I split the counties into two separate categories, those counties that contracted out primary care services and those counties that did not. The counties that did not were Brevard, Duval, Hillsborough, and Polk, and the counties that contracted out these primary care services, Broward, Miami-Dade, Orange, Palm Beach, and Pinellas County. So I have here a slide that shows the average number of employees by year, by group. Now the group, again, are privatized counties, non-privatized counties. The non-privatized counties appears in blue, and the privatized counties appear in green. And you'll see here that the most dramatic change in the number of employees occurs in the non-privatized counties. However, the number of employees still remain below that of the privatized counties. Here we have average expenditure per year by group. This slide shows that the number of clients, it shows the number of clients within each group, and again we see an increase in the number of clients over time within both groups, but we see a decrease in the non-privatized counties between 2003 and 2004, and we again see that the highest number of clients, I'm sorry, the expenditure, the expenditure decreased between 2003 and 2004, and the expenditure increased over time within the non-privatized group. So here we have clients. Okay, this shows the number of clients, and we see here increasing number of clients by group, by year. And again, the blue line, non-privatized counties, we see a slight decrease, then an increase, and we see a larger number of clients in the privatized counties, and it increases over this time period. Here we have the average number of services per year by group, and we see a shift. We have the most services in the non-privatized counties. And over time, we can see there is actually a decrease in the number, average number of services. And over time, between 2001 and 2004, we actually see an increase in the average number of services per group in the privatized counties. So, look at whether these changes were statistically significant. Types of analyses. I used an analysis of variance or univariate procedure, univariate analysis of variance. And I also used generalized estimating equations with a repeated subject because we're repeating counties over time in the analysis. Here we have our results. The results for cost per service by year and group, we see the cost is actually higher among the privatized group, but it does show a decrease over time. And the cost per service is much lower in the non-privatized group, but it increases over time. This is cost per client per year by group, and we see a shift. Initially, the privatized counties are substantially higher, but then there's a dramatic shift where it falls below the cost for non-privatized counties, and we also see a decline over time in the non-privatized counties. So a summary of our results shows that the average cost per service was about $12.92 in the non-privatized county. counties, it was $20.44 in the privatized counties, and this was actually significant. You can see the differences in cost per client. This ended up not being significant, although the privatized counties, slightly more. Total expenditure, slightly more, but not significantly different. And also the number of employees, slightly more, but not significantly different. We did have a significance in the number of clients. Now, there's a difference of 19,000 clients. However, I did this analysis using a more robust test because it actually ended up being 0.05, so it could go either way. And when I did another analysis using a more robust test, it was 0.07. So it's going the other way. The number of services, we see a difference here of over 500,000 services. There were 1.6 million services in the non-privatized counties, 1.1 million in the privatized counties, and this actually ended up being significant. So, to talk about the limitations and delimitations of the data, the study used only 4 years of data for 9 counties. However, the 9 counties included over 60% of the state's population. Other limitations, some of the programs were not available in all counties, so these programs were actually eliminated for funding analysis. And then some primary care services were assigned to other funding sources, so they weren't included in the analysis for primary care, even though they are primary care services. So in conclusion, contracting for services is likely to continue. However, we should carefully monitor the effects on the availability of services and the effects on the health outcomes of the community. In this case, we had mixed results, but I do believe that we can make the correct choices and we can create an efficient and effective system. Thank you for your attention, and I think right now we can open the floor up for questions. Yes.
Just a quick question on the services. That $500,000 is different from the actual services. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to be able to determine how many of those services were actually appropriate and how many of them were excessive?
That goes back to the theory. You can say that these were appropriate services, but then based on the framework of the economic theory that I was using, it's the possibility that they were excessive services. So, no, I don't have a way of knowing that, not from the information that I had. Are the questions for me or for other people?
For
oh, yes.
Actually got a couple. So when you're looking at all these different services that are provided in the local, how did you get to an unduplicated client?
I asked them for it. They gave me a
absolutely remarkable.
I don't know if you've used Florida data, but it's outstanding.
Oh my gosh. And then secondly, if I was really interested in your charts correctly, and I'm actually having trouble seeing the color of the charts where I'm sitting. But is there anything that attributed for such a significant it looks like there's a significant drop both in employee count, dollar count and cost per client between 03 and 04. Was there something significant that happened at that time period?
I'm not aware of anything, but it's possible that that's when they were renegotiating the contracts and they were able to negotiate a better price, but I don't have an exact
point in time where there's a drop in just about every single pattern.
Right. Now, I did have an explanation for why we had a sharp increase between 2001 and 2003, health departments got a lot more money because this was after 9/11, so some of the money shifted, even though it was bioterrorism money, it shifted into other areas of the health department. So I did have an explanation for that. It's possible that it was just a correction. They figured that, particularly with employees, we have too many employees, and it was a correction.
Another question.
Yeah, I have one.
We hope we're going to do it in a very order.
I'll ask the chief to come back.
My question for you is, on the group that was contracting out, would you include the cost of monitoring those contracts in those costs?
That would be included under the number of employees that were actually within that program.
Okay. And one more for you. Did you break out on the ones that were privatized, which were more cost effective? Which services? So some cost more, maybe others cost less, because that's an aggregate amount.
I did not do that, but I do have that information.
I'm just curious if some proved to be more effective when you privatized them than others. Clearly the non-privatized showed a lot of benefit. Mm-hmm.
I do have that information, but I wasn't looking specifically at that for the
okay.
Any more questions?
Anyways, anybody else in this room have any information that Pinellas County, Florida brings to mind? No, I'm thinking about Mark Twain jumping frogs in Pinellas County. anyway, that's extraneous. Jill, can we begin with you there?
Sure.
I'll continue
sure.
with you.
Great.
Questions?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Because your model seems to, or at least your setup seems to resemble Oregon, among other decentralized public health delivery too. Your 53 boards, mm-hmm. are those in statute, state statutes?
Yep. Yep.
And by the 53 boards, then do the local health departments report to those boards, or do they report to county commissioners?
They report to the board. To the board, the community health board in many cases is the county board. But it doesn't have to be, but it can be. Most often it is.
Okay. You select, you listed those six areas of service delivery. We have
yep.
five that are similar in statute as well.
Sure.
Within that breakdown, then, do they get to select the further service deliveries within those six that they can choose when they report back to you on their
It's own all control? Local control, yes. Yep. Yep.
Your expenditure analysis, does it account, it's, stated that it has all funding sources, but does it account for where some may contribute more at the local level than others? That's where we see the most difference.
Yep, huge difference. In when looking at the expenditures, we knew from the 2007 data, it was 62% was local funding, 18% was state funding, and about 20% was federal funding. So that's that funding pool for local public health in Minnesota. So it's a combination, and you have a wide variety. We have some counties with no dollars from local. Absolutely true. So we have a little bit of everything.
Zero to like 112 or
yes.
something.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonnet does that too.
Okay. In any of your boards, does this include such as mental health delivery, or is it strictly public health? Does it also account for like public health services, i.e., in your corrections areas, such as jails?
It yes and no. The first answer is no. It doesn't typically include mental health services.
Okay.
Those would be in human services for the most part. But it does include correctional health. Our county provides correctional health in our jails. So some counties provide it, some counties don't. So it depends on whether you provide it or not. But yes, it
okay.
does include but correctional health.
Tease that out as far as making comparison to all counties?
Not specifically to that, but we could, because that correctional health sits in that access quality, that big, the one that had the most funding, assure the quality and access of services, that's where correctional health is. And we know what counties are doing correctional health, so you could look at their data that they've reported, expenditure data, and tease that out. We have some counties providing hospice care, for example.
Right.
We tease that all out, so I have this big long chart of all the unique things. We have one county that has a $5 million incinerator for garbage, and they called me up like day one and said, don't count all that money.
Yeah.
But we've made clearly, we've got that in the model, so we can articulate that, and they know how to talk about that within their results.
Okay. And when you looked at your nominal group, in getting at your gap analysis, were you able to tease out the different delivery models? I'm thinking of things like, so if you have a need for, say, nurse practitioner or something under WIC, you know, around workforce issues where it becomes more expensive in rural and frontier mm-hmm. settings, versus the urban?
We didn't tease that out, but here's how it's coming out to play. We've had many discussions about this as I traveled around the state. Remember the range from 12 to 194? What size counties do you think are the 194 per capita? There are small counties who, they right after, I have about six more projects now that have lined up behind this in my spare time. One of the things that we've talked about is, can someone please articulate the fixed costs of being a local public health agency in Minnesota? Then this cost model would really mean something. Because those little counties, whether because of the model, the statute says you all have to provide the same set of services. Sounds great, but you're a million and you're a thousand. So the model would really do even more help to us if we could identify this fixed cost. So that's when my hair is all the way gray.
The sophistication in accounting with IT, with everything,
More and more, yeah.
And what's the population of Minnesota?
Population of Minnesota?
5.2.
Yeah, it's about 5.2 million. Fauna's our numbers lady.
Good. Slightly under Washington.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for your presentation. Jeff Johnson from Washington, D.C. I appreciate you explaining that in the end that it didn't account for population risk factors, but I'm curious in that, did you find that the counties who spent more per capita had better health outcomes because they were spending more per individual?
It's a great question. Not yet. And right behind the figure out the fixed cost question is, it's great to have a model that articulates the cost, but right behind it, the Commissioner of Health stood up right next to me and said, Jill, this is great, but what are we getting for the money? What are those outcomes? But yeah.
The biggest problem with that question is, you tell me those end outcomes.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you can give me that list, I can move right to it.
Yes, touche. Yeah. But right behind it, we're looking at some of that. I mean, it's pushing us. That's one of the things this model has done. It's a first, but it's getting clear about it.
I know that when budget, you have to go to policy that you're going to want to say, it will show me how it's impacted, show me the effectiveness of these resources.
Go ahead.
That was a great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Following up on his question, basically, most states and local governments now are cutting expenditures for health and other services. Mm-hmm. You showed, obviously, there's a gap in the need. Mm-hmm. Have you found that either the state, or at least in some cases, some of the local boards or commissioners have tried to protect or hold harmless, or at least impact health less than perhaps they would have in other budget-cutting scenarios?
I haven't found that they're holding or they're doing less, but what I have, I think in the last 2 months, I've gotten probably six calls from local public health directors who were under pressure to cut their budgets. And at least there is a way to articulate, this is the state mean in this area. You want me to cut it 50%. You know, we figured out a gap. Here's what we should be spending. We aren't even spending the state mean, for example. It's just a way to inform them. So a couple of them have held. A couple have said, this was the first time at least I could stand up to the board and say, no, we're not going to cut in this area. Here's an area of responsibility where we maybe are higher, that we could do a little bit of flexibility. You don't really want to say that out loud, but at least it's in as directors' heads. The way my county was spending 99 cents per capita for infectious disease, if you look there, we're supposed to spend like over two. And so I use myself as an example. In 2007, in our county, we had no cases of TB. We had no follow-up infectious disease. I've got a staff person in there that's been there for 7-8 years and could run it in the sleep. We were efficient that year. And therefore, yes, I'm very proud of the 99 cents. We did what we needed to, but it gave us the flexibility in other areas. The model really has started to get directors to talk about it. Okay, if nothing else, it's like, stand up and here's your data, and it really is the tool. So the conversations are just starting, and at least you can hold the line. Some folks are hopeful.
I think there's one.
Oh, there's one more question.
One more, and it's similar to these questions at the end. Is, do you have any ideas of how you would adjust your model going forward so that you can look at workforce issues? Mm-hmm. And your costs will be higher when you have populations with higher risk.
Yes.
And gee, what is the standard we're measuring this against? And I wonder if Janet might have some ideas about how you would do that based on social determinants of health. Do you have some ideas going forward of ways Because, you know, little information can be dangerous.
Yeah, well, and that's it. And the director said, Jill, don't say this out loud too much. I think that going forward, the two things are fixed costs, figure them out for determining what the fixed costs are, and secondly, right behind it, equal, would be the outcomes. We're, you know, look at a few key indicators at all 87. We have 87 counties, 53 boards. Can you find at least a few to start with? It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be pretty. But I think that the push for some outcomes is going to be out there first. And then start the conversation, because it's about telling your story. If there's one thing all the directors have liked, let's tell your story about what this means. And we can do it. We really can.
Jill's being very modest. She also hired a marketing person to give all the directors talking points.
It's been very fun.
Can we say our message?
Maybe part of the time, 50% of the time.
Thank you.